Welcome, everyone, to the Arthroscopy Association's Arthroscopy Journal podcast. I'm Dr. Andrea Spiker from the University of Wisconsin, and today I'm joined by Dr. Matt Salzler, who is the Chief of the Division of Sports Medicine and Vice Chair for Academic Affairs at Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston, Massachusetts. Dr. Salzler was a senior author of the article titled Operative Management for Anterior Cruciate Ligament Injury in Patients Over 40 Years Old Yields Increased Clinical Outcome, a Systematic Review, which was published in the March 2023 edition of the Arthroscopy Journal. Dr. Salzler's co-authors were Jack Roberts IV, Brandon Ness, Josh Cleland, Rick Puzzatello, Mark Marinch, Alexis Wright, and Megan Donaldson. Welcome, Dr. Salzler, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Matt, can you start by telling us about you and your current practice?
Sure. So I've been at Tufts for about 10 years now. I sort of have a, in some ways, a very standard sports medicine practice, pretty knee and shoulder heavy. The way it's a little different than the standard practice is I have a lot more complex cases than simple cases, but again, still mostly knee and shoulder.
Great. Thank you. And now, the purpose of the paper that we're discussing today was to evaluate outcomes of anterior cruciate ligament rupture in patients age 40 or older, treated either non-operatively or with ACL reconstruction. So can you tell us a little bit about how this study question came about?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it probably came about in two different ways. One kind of a fun story, one probably kind of a boring story. So the more interesting story is a lot of our papers, a lot of our DAs come from clinical questions and clinical observations. And I think that, you know, when I see patients over 40 in my office, oftentimes they're coming in for a second or sometimes even third opinion. They already have their MRI. They know their ACL's torn and they want to have surgery. And their questions are just, you know, what graft should I use? How should I do this or that? And they've already had their mind made up and they're actually kind of looking forward to their ACL surgery. They don't need to be convinced. They're trying to convince me to do it. Whereas when I see a 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 22-year-old, the last thing they want to hear is that they have an ACL tear. And if they do, they want to know, is there any way I can get away without surgery? And so I always thought that's kind of interesting that this older age group comes in kind of wanting surgery. You know, and this is where it's kind of a little bit controversial, but I'm actually not 100% convinced they need surgery. You know, that's not a very popular view in our field, but I'm not convinced that they all do. I mean, some of them certainly do. We can probably talk a little bit later on about the nuances of that if we have time. But I think that sort of juxtaposition of the patients that I think maybe don't need it quite as much as these younger patients, but that they want it more. And so I was kind of interested in what the outcomes were. Then there's the sort of the boring answer, which is, this is what I do a lot of my research in. You know, I do a lot of stuff in patients over 40, especially with ligamentous knee injuries. And there's no kind of better way to really get a hold of the literature other than doing a good systematic review on it. So that's kind of the boring answer.
Wonderful. Can you take us through your typical thought process, your preference on graft choices, your patient education that you go through in clinic when a patient comes to your clinic with that ACL rupture? And you mentioned a little bit about the differences in how they present, but tell us a little bit about how you are guiding that discussion with your patients.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit different from patient to patient. I mean, if a patient comes in knowing nothing, and that's a very long conversation. If a patient comes in and they already have all the answers, that's a different conversation. So it does depend a little bit on the patient, but you know, in general, I sort of will say, you know, there's something that this is something that doesn't necessarily require surgery. And I sort of gauge their response. They look at me like I'm crazy, and I'll kind of follow it up with, you know, but most people choose to have surgery. And I kind of take their lead and see where they want to go with it. But if they kind of have this like, oh, tell me more, then I will say, you know, this is sort of where the data is on operative outcomes. And we know they're really good operative outcomes. When it comes to non-operative outcomes, we just don't really know. And I think that there are different types of ACL tears. And if someone's coming in with a bucket handle tear with a repairable meniscus tear, that's different. If it's a complete mid-substance explosion, different. Chronic tear, different. But an acute tear, and a lot of these are skiers, a lot of them have a type 1 tear, maybe a type 2 tear. Their exam shows, you know, a 1B Lachman, maybe that hasn't quite firmed up yet. Maybe they have a little glottal pivot. These are patients I think you really could have a conversation with them, like, this is the risk, these are the benefits of operative management, these are the risks and benefits of non-operative management. We have another paper that showed that the risks of meniscal injuries are not quite as high as they are with delayed surgical management in this cohort than with younger cohorts. So I think that it is okay if they want to, you know, either A, take their time to schedule their surgery, just what most of them want, or B, you know, try a case of non-operative management, give it a trial. think it's reasonable, but the conversation depends a lot on what they want and what they're interested in. And the reality is a lot of them want surgery.
You mentioned earlier the differences in the two different age groups and what their approaches to surgery, for example, when they come to meet you. Do you think you've noticed a difference in the type of mechanism based on age? So you mentioned skiers. You know, are older patients presenting with lower mechanism injuries, and potentially is that why they're better non-operative candidates?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's probably the case. I think that the activity levels are a little bit lower. No, and that's not universally true, right? I mean, there are very high level athletes that are playing twisting pivoting sports into their 40s. But for the most part, what we see in our practice is a lot more of the 42-year-old, 47-year-old skier. And I think skiing, you know, obviously skiing can be a very high level energy injury, but a lot of these are not professional skiers. These are, you know, normal weekend warriors. They're out there with their kids. They're on a blue or an easy black, and they just kind of have a twist the wrong way, or somebody runs over their ski. And it is a lower energy injury. And I think that the torsion levels are a little bit different too. You know, the sports that they're going back to are different, right? So a lot of skiers say, well, you know, other than skiing, you know, maybe I jog, I, you know, elliptical, Peloton, those types of things. But not a lot of them are looking to get back to twisting, pivoting sports. I think that probably makes a little bit of difference too.
And that leads into my next question, which has to do with the fact that over the past few decades, there has been actually an increase in the number of ACL reconstructions being performed in older patients, and especially in patients older than 40. Why do you think there's been this increase?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think the question I want to know, and I don't think we're really going to figure this out, is there just an increase in the number of reconstructions being performed in this age cohort, or is there an increase in number of tears? Right. So we know that in younger cohorts that the number of tears is actually a lot higher than the number of reconstructions. And that's too bad. That's an area where I think we could do a better job. But in the over 40 cohort, I don't really know if we're just operating on a higher percentage of them or we're operating the same percentage of them. There's just more of them. It's probably a combination of both. I think people are active older in their lives. And, you know, as I get older, what is old seems younger. So I think that that's part of it, is that people are active. And then also I think people are aware of the literature. I mean, people are savvy. You know, a lot of the 40-year-olds that are coming to our office say, hey, look, like I either know somebody who's been through this, or I Googled this, you know, Dr. Google, and they found out that, you know, we do great with the ACL reconstructions. And so I think that is probably part of it too, is patients, I think, push forward a little bit.
Now, maybe this is a chance for us to discuss some of the differences in your patient population, depending on age, on things like graft choices. Do you alter what you talk about with your patients based on, you know, their age and what they plan to get back to?
Oh, definitely. You know, I think that, you know, we have the Moon and Mars data, and I'm a firm believer in that. And I think that under the age of 40, I'd say for me, and the threshold's different for different people, but for me, I'm really hard pressed to do an allograft under the age of 40. When it gets to over 40, I think that changes a little bit. The data on re-tear rates for allograft and autograft, you know, continue to decline as you get older. By the time you're in your 40s, those numbers are both fairly low. And the difference in time away from work, and that's what a lot of people are, or at least my patients are asking about us. Not when can I get back to sports, because, you know, 9 months versus a year, because allografts take longer to incorporate. They don't care so much about when they're going to get back. They just want to know, how long am I going to be out of work? How long will I not be able to take care of my kids or my family or my dog or whatever? And so I think that for them, the risks of an allograft in terms of that marginally higher re-tear rate might be better than the going with an autograft. Now, if someone's a high-level twisting pivoting athlete and they're 47, I think I'd still recommend an autograft. But for a lot of these patients, I think allograft is a good option. And for me, specifically what allograft, and this is, there's no evidence to support this. This is just my sort of clinical observation. I found that the BTB allografts tend to have, at least in my hands, you know, more consistent grade 1A Lachman than the soft tissue allografts.
And what about autografts in your practice? What is your preference? What is your thought process on which graft, which autograft?
Across all ages. So it's as with most people, it's probably changed. I'm probably, with autografts, probably, you know, 40-50% quad, 40-50% BTB, and then, you know, a small subset of hamstring. So I've kind of shifted away from hamstring.
That's great. Yeah, I've found that I've done the same too over the years, just less and less hamstring in my own practice as well. So now, ultimately, in this paper, you and your team included 40 studies with over 1,500 individual ACL reconstructions in patients over the age of 40. So let's discuss a little of what you found. Can you take us through some of those key results in this paper?
Sure. You know, I think what I sort of was hoping to do, what I was setting out to do, was to really look at the differences between non-operative and operative outcomes. That's sort of my bias. And, you know, what we found was there isn't really much out there on non-operative outcomes. And so that was a little bit disappointing because there just really isn't anything there. And you can't write a systematic review on something that doesn't exist, right? You're kind of limited to what's out there. So it focused prominently, almost exclusively, on operative outcomes. And what we found is that patients do pretty well. To some extent, we knew that already. You know, there's been a fair number of papers out there, as you know, evidenced by the number that we were able to include in the systematic review. But one of the things that we wanted to look at was whether or not patients are achieving the minimally clinically important difference in the PASS scores. And it was a little hard to do that because not every study included pre-op and post-op, you know, TEGNER, IKDC, and Lysholm scores, but enough of them did. And what we found was that a lot of patients are achieving them based on a mean. But what we really wanted to know, and we couldn't really get to that with a systematic review, is how many of them are getting there, right? What percent are achieving MCID? What percent are achieving PASS? And I think that those numbers are probably pretty high. And there was a really good editorial commentary, I think it was by Pat Smith, on this paper. And he said, you know, one thing that's really important when you're looking at a PASS score is, you know, what is the definition of PASS? And is it the same, right? Because what a 23-year-old Olympic caliber twisting pivoting athlete might consider a PASS on an IKDC is going to be very different than what I would want or what I need. I agree with that. And we used what is traditionally used for the IKDC PASS score of about 76. But I agree with him that there are differences. And we actually published another article also in arthroscopy about a year ago looking at the same question. And we actually found that in the over 40 cohort, that the IKDC score that probably best approximates a PASS score for ACL reconstruction is probably closer to 66. What they're looking for is a little bit different. So I think the numbers of what we consider successful ACL reconstructions in this age cohort are probably even higher than the literature suggests, because patients' expectations, not that they're necessarily lower, but what they're happy with and what they want out of it, and what they need to get performance-wise, is probably not what a 20-year-old needs.
That's a really excellent point and good insight, and something to keep in consideration as we continue to do more research in this area. So do you think that these results will change your practice, or was this confirmatory for you?
I think it was more confirmatory, but I think that the thing that it did is it really, really made me realize that we need more information on non-operative management. And so we're working on a paper on that right now. There's one that's on its way through and in ASMAR. But when you're looking at retrospective data, especially when it comes to operative, non-operative genitive ACLs, there's just so much bias, right? The patients that choose not to have surgery, that you recommend not have surgery for, there's a reason for that. And so you can do your best, you know, matched cohort. You can test your best propensity matching, but there's a reason some of them chose surgery and some of them didn't. And so you can't really do that. But I think this made me realize that I would really like to get a little bit more information on non-operative versus operative, but it's a hard sell to get either patients or other surgeons on board with that.
Absolutely. Would you say also over the decades, our post-op recovery has become potentially easier for patients, and so surgery may not be as hard a sell for many?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've definitely come a long way in our recovery. It's interesting that we've come a long way in terms of making surgery less painful, making the experience easier, getting them in rehab, educating them what to expect. But at the same time, we've also delayed their return, right? So we now know for a young person with autograft, you know, what people used to go back at 6 months, 5 months even sometimes. And now, you know, I rarely clear anybody before 8 months, and it's often, you know, 9 or 10. And with allografts, I'd say, you know, a minimum of 1 year. And I'd often, if you're not really chomping at the bit to get back, 2 years is even better, because it really takes a full 2 years for an allograft to integrate. And so I think that the earlier side is easier, but it's important to educate them that even though it's easier at the beginning, it's still a long wait and there's still a lot to do.
Absolutely. And now, you alluded to this a little, but after completing this study, What questions do you think we really need to explore further based on what you found in this paper?
So I think there's a few different things. There's the sort of the boring research question, which is, you know, what percentage of patients are going to be achieving the MCID in the past on Leishholm, on Tegner, on IKDC? I think that that's important for us to know to be able to inform our patients, but that's a little bit less exciting. I think the more exciting questions and the more kind of practice-relevant questions are what's the best graft, right? Is there a difference between autograft and allograft, and if so, in what patients? And then if you are going to go with an allograft, whether or not all soft tissue is equivalent to bone, tendon, bone. And then finally, the big question for me, and this is the sort of the pie in the sky question that I'm probably not ever going to answer, is, you know, what is the role of non-operative management? And then the sort of the in-between question of what may be the role of repair in some of these patients is if non-operative management might work, you know, maybe repair, which is a much easier recovery, you know, in these, you know, these type ones. I'm not talking about the mid-substance, but, you know, perhaps even, you know, Martha Murray's work with a bear, these mid-substances might even be a good option. So I think that's where the really exciting questions are for me.
Absolutely. Well, any parting thoughts before we wrap up today?
To tell our patients that if they do want surgery, they're going to do well. I think we can pretty reliably say that. But it's still there. There still are some good questions out there that hopefully I'll have answers for in the future.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Matt, today. We really appreciate your time and expertise.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Salzler's article titled Operative Management for Anterior Cruciate Ligament Injuries in Patients Over 40 Years Old Yields Increased Clinical Outcome, a Systematic Review, can be found online at arthroscopyjournal.org. This concludes our episode of the Arthroscopy Journal podcast. Thank you for joining us. The views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of the Arthroscopy Association or the Arthroscopy Journal.